This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Rick Britton is live in studio. He joins us once a week to talk a little history, and we are counting down the top 24, the top 24...
Civil War battles fought in the state of Virginia.
Yeah, that's it. The top 24 battles, the most significant battles fought in the state of Virginia. In the Civil War. But before we get to that, what's the latest from the Senior Center?
We had a great talk last night on the Battle of Malvern Hill. Bobby Lee Crick, who is a historian with the National Park Service down in Richmond, came up and delivered a great talk on the Battle of Malvern Hill. We were just talking about that last week, weren't we? I think we did, yep.
I think we were, yeah.
And we still have some seats on the bus. We're going to be going down a week from yesterday. So Wednesday, July 25th, we're actually taking a trip down to Richmond, and we're going to spend the afternoon on the Malvern Hill battlefield. So if anybody's interested in going, I think it's about $70 for the day. It includes lunch at the tobacco company. Everybody loves the tobacco company down at Shaco Slip. So if they want some more information or want to sign up, it's 974-6538, and that's the travel office down at the Senior Center.
And Malvern Hill, where you were telling us last time, was the last major battle.
In the 7 days battles.
And the 7 days battles was that march up the peninsula.
The 7 days battles are a week of battles right outside of Richmond, to the northeast, to the east, and to the southeast of Richmond. What you're thinking about is the peninsula campaign.
Yeah.
The 7 days battles ended the peninsula campaign.
Yes, that's what I mean.
The peninsula campaign includes McClellan's Landing outside of Fortress Monroe.
Battle of Williamsburg.
The Siege of Yorktown, the Battle of Williamsburg, and then up to Richmond and the 7 days. All of that.
So the 7 days ended, the 7 days battles ended the campaign of the Union troops' effort to take Richmond from the east, basically, up the peninsula.
That's right.
And Malvern Hill was just a complete devastation for Confederates, right?
It was, and it was a loss.
What's that quote? Somebody says this wasn't a battle, it was murder or something like that?
This is not battle. This is not combat. This is not war. It's murder.
Because
they were funneled up this slope, this long open field of fire, into the teeth of 35 Federal artillery pieces, and over 5,000 Confederates were killed or wounded, and only a little over 3,000 Federals. So it was a Confederate defeat, but nonetheless, McClellan continued his retreat down to Harrison's Landing, and that's Berkeley Plantation on the James River.
Yeah.
As he was telling us last night, an interesting little factoid, his army was so large, 120,000 men, that get this, it needed 700 tons of munitions, food, forage, every day to subsist that army of 120,000 men.
The Union troops.
700 tons.
Holy cow. So were they just bringing that stuff up the James River?
They were bringing it up the James. Originally, they used the White House, which is on the Pamunkey River, and there's a... there was a railroad that goes out to the White House there, but he was kind of chased away from his supply base, and so he changed his base to Harrison's Landing on the James River.
So the supply guys in the rear who were making this happen and feeding the troops and getting stuff to them.
Incredibly busy guys.
Yeah, I can only imagine, too, that what they learned during the Civil War about supplying an army must have just been incredible.
Well, just think, 120,000-man army, anywhere they go, they're a large city. You know, anywhere they go.
Yeah. Is that why, too, when they would get into a place, they would often, I mean, a lot of these guys were hungry. I mean, they weren't incredibly well supplied, especially at different times during the war. So there is accounts of, you know, when they get into a place, they break into homes looking for food and bread.
Absolutely. Yeah. Because the army fare, you know, is pretty standard stuff.
Yeah.
You know, you get your crackers, you get a little bit of beef, you know, you get some salt.
Not much.
You get some bread. Not much, yeah.
Rick Britton is live in studio, and he joins us to talk about the most significant Civil War battles fought in Virginia. We continue our countdown this week with number 8, Second Manassas. But before we get to that, you are developing a new class.
That's right.
Over at the Senior Center, right?
Yeah, that's right. It's going to start up in October, and it's going to run for 6 consecutive Thursdays starting on October 7th. And, you know, it's for the folks who are transplanted here or new retirees. You know, we have a lot of those folks
in the community.
And a lot of the folks, as I'm sure you also know, are here because of the history and they want to learn. So this is Virginia History 101, and the idea is to try to cover some of the big topics in the early history of the state of Virginia. So we're going to talk about Native Virginians or Native Americans. We're going to talk about tobacco, the first big cash crop. Slavery, the ending of the revolution here in Virginia, the Yorktown campaign, Washington's presidency, and therein we're going to talk about the influence of Virginia politicians on the young republic, which was immense, of course. And then, of course, we can't forget architecture in the Jeffersonian period. So we're going to bring in a bunch of scholars and lecturers, and it's going to be a lot of fun.
There you go. And yeah, you can get more information from the Senior Center about how to sign up and learn more. What, 293?
It's 974-6538. And pretty soon all this information will be up on the website. It's www.seniorcenterinc.org.
There you go.
Yeah.
So remind us again, before we start talking about some of these Civil War battles again today, the list of battles that you've identified as the most significant.
Right.
The more most important on Virginia soil.
For different reasons. Right. So, there are 24. It goes First Manassas, the Monitor versus the Virginia, Fort Darling, also known as Drury's Bluff, Seven Pines, also known as Fair Oaks, Cross Keys and Port Republic, Gaines's Mill, Malvern Hill, Second Manassas, Fredericksburg, Mosby's Fairfax Courthouse Raid, Chancellorsville, Brandy Station, The Wilderness, Spotsylvania Courthouse, New Market, Cold Harbor, Trevilian Station, The Crater, and here's one that goes by many different names. We'll get to it eventually. It's number 19, Chaffin's Farm, Fort Harrison, or New Market Heights, lots of different names. Cedar Creek in the Shenandoah Valley, Fort Stedman, Five Forks, Sailor's Creek, Appomattox Courthouse.
And folks can check out podcasts of these conversations.
Absolutely.
Where you talk in detail about all of these battles at SevillePodcast.com, or you can also find them at WINA.com. And let us begin today with, we are on number 8 of this list, Second Manassas.
Second Manassas. So at the end of Malvern Hill, Malvern Hill completed the 7 days battle. So McClellan and his very large army are encamped along the James River being supplied down there. Remember, we were talking about 700 tons of supplies a day, a little over 100,000 men by this time. And he had completely lost the initiative. Up to that time, up to the 7 days battles, he had had the initiative because he's threatening the Confederate capital at Richmond. Robert E. Lee in the 7 days lost more men but took the initiative away from McClellan. By this time, the Lincoln administration is getting very frustrated with George Brinton McClellan.
And when is this, Rick?
What's that?
When is this?
Let's see. Second, Malvern Hill was fought on July 1st. But by this time, they're already having an inkling that George Brinton McClellan is just probably not the way to go.
But what year is it?
1862. Right. So we're in the second summer of the war by this time already. So what they did was they took all of the forces that had been facing Stonewall Jackson in the Shenandoah Valley. And we talked about that when we were talking about Cross Keys and Port Republic, the forces under Fremont, under Banks, and McDowell. And they created another army and brought in a general officer from the West, John Pope. And if there's anybody who's more of a braggart than George Brinton McClellan, in the Union Army, it was John Pope. And he shows up in Northern Virginia. He commands a little over 50,000 men, and he starts issuing these edicts. They're very stern versus the Southerners, whereas McClellan, remember, was a Democrat. So McClellan was kind of conciliatory to Southerners. They were very stern, and he talked about how his headquarters were going to be in the saddle. In other words, you know, he was going to be very aggressive, and he was going to capture all of Northern Virginia. And the famous quip that quickly appeared in the newspapers, the Southern newspapers, was that Pope's headquarters were where his hindquarters ought to be.
So this is a new general for a new Union Army.
And a new army operating in Northern Virginia. So all of a sudden, Robert E. Lee, located at Richmond, is facing 100,000 men still on the Virginia Peninsula and another 50,000 men in Northern Virginia. So he did something.
Let me break it in.
It's incredibly daring.
Here's one thing I don't understand.
Yeah.
McClellan's men are coming up the peninsula.
Right.
In the Peninsula Campaign to
right.
take Richmond. This is
right.
the second summer, just 1862.
Right.
And they crushed the Confederacy at Malvern Hill. Why didn't they move then into Richmond if they won such a decisive battle?
Because because of what I just stated. McClellan mentally had lost the initiative.
So even though they won that battle,
something that you see over and over and over again, the fact that McClellan was always magnifying the number of his enemies. So just the fact that Robert E. Lee was willing to attack him at Malvern Hill meant to McClellan that Lee must have a quarter of a million men. He must outnumber him at least 2-1. Some folks have heard about Pinkerton, the Pinkerton detectives. McClellan was using Pinkerton, had brought him over from Chicago, and Pinkerton knew nothing about military intelligence and was feeding McClellan all of these erroneous numbers. And, of course, anytime you capture a Southerner, the Southerner is going to say, oh, yeah, we got 200,000 men in Richmond. So all this stuff added together fed McClellan's totally wrong idea, and the fact adding into this, and the most significant part of this is the fact that Robert E. Lee was so audacious, although he was outnumbered.
Must have been so frustrating for Lincoln and some of the guys in Washington looking at a map.
Frustrating,
at McClellan's army just outside of Richmond, thinking, "Why aren't you taking Richmond?"
And on top of all this, even though he outnumbers Lee, so Lee at this time has some good numbers. He has about 70,000 men in and around Richmond. McClellan starts asking for reinforcements on top of all of this stuff. Frustrating isn't even the beginning of the word to describe how Lincoln was starting to feel. So they form this other army. Pope starts off okay. He marches south into Virginia and gets all the way to the Rappahannock. Now, Robert E. Lee is faced with this horrible dilemma. What does he do? So he chooses something, again, that's amazingly audacious, amazingly aggressive. He takes his army. He forms it into two wings, one under Longstreet and one under Stonewall Jackson, who, like Robert E. Lee, is incredibly aggressive. And decides that he's going to focus his attention now on John Pope. In fact, he told his staff members that he wanted to suppress that man. That man had really angered Robert E. Lee and the Jefferson Davis administration in Richmond. So Jackson starts off on this amazing end run to get behind Pope with about half of Lee's army. So he's got about 25,000 men because Lee had to leave a force to at least observe McClellan and to keep up this fantasy, you know, that they've got him outnumbered and there are a lot of Confederate troops in and around Richmond. Jackson does this amazing end run and actually gets to Pope's with two marches, one of 26 miles and another one the next day of 36 miles, which is an amazingly long march for one day. In fact, his men were known as the Foot Cavalry, takes Pope's supply base behind him at Manassas Junction. And there are these great stories and there's these great images of these, you know, these half-starved Confederates that are barefoot that are now feasting on stuff that they pull out of these boxcars like lobster and shrimp and, you know, and all kinds of amazing victuals. Well, of course, Pope has to retreat now. So he retreats from the Rappahannock and tries to get at Jackson. What Jackson does, and Robert E. Lee eventually, a couple days later, sends Longstreet behind him. So he's about to reunite his army of about 55,000 men. Pope concentrates against Jackson, and Jackson picks a defensive position to the west, the northwest of the first Manassas battlefield. And that's why this is called Second Manassas. It's almost virtually on the same ground, but just a little bit to the northwest. There's a railroad cut, it's called, but it's mostly a railroad embankment with hills behind it. It was an incompleted railroad, but it forms a perfect breastwork. So Jackson puts his men behind the railroad embankment, and the battle is fought on August 29th, August 30th. The first day, Pope concentrates about 60,000 men against Jackson's 25,000 men, but is unable, with these ferocious assaults, but uncoordinated assaults, he's unable to dislodge Stonewall Jackson. Meanwhile, on the afternoon of the 29th, Longstreet comes up on Jackson's right, and something that has amazed historians for all these years is that Pope was unaware that Robert E. Lee had reunited his army in his front. So now he's got Jackson on the left, Longstreet on the right, facing Pope's left, unbeknownst to John Pope. So Pope continues to attack Jackson on the 30th, and then Lee launches Longstreet's fresh men against John Pope's left flank and drives him from the battlefield in the second Confederate victory at Manassas. First Manassas and Second Manassas, both huge Confederate victories. Of course, this one really important, too, because it's only 25 miles away from the Union capital.
So what we're talking with Rick Britton, local historian and cartographer. We are counting down the most significant battles that were fought here in Virginia during the Civil War. Today we're looking at Second Manassas, the second summer of the war, the summer of 1862, August 29th and 30th. So what was the result of this? I mean, what was the fallout from this?
The result was they sacked John Pope and they sent him out west. McClellan had been given orders to withdraw his men by water and bring them to the defense of the national
capital. So come back down the James.
Come back down the James, up the Chesapeake, up the Potomac, back to Washington. He did this very half-heartedly, and people have really slammed McClellan. Probably egotistically, he didn't want to cooperate with John Pope. He didn't want to turn over his troops to Pope. That's what people have said over the years. But with Pope sacked and now the Confederates threatening the federal capital, Lincoln looks around. And who does he have there, you know, standing in the front row again is George Brinton McClellan. So he puts him back in charge. And this is when now Robert E. Lee marches out of Virginia into Maryland. And it's the first Confederate invasion of the North. But what's amazing is in the course of just a few months that Robert E. Lee had been in command, it really is truly amazing. He starts off in command with McClellan at the very doorstep of the Confederate capital. Then eventually ends up with John Pope taking the northern portion of the state of Virginia away from him. By the end of his period in command, the Federals are back in Washington, D.C., back to square one, hardly any troops on the peninsula and none in northern Virginia. It's amazing what he did in this very, very audacious two campaigns.
It really is striking. Could McClellan have taken Richmond in the second summer of 1862? McClellan could have won that won the war in the second summer.
Absolutely. If he had the cojones to do what needed to be done. But McClellan was not a Grant. He was not a Sherman. He was not a Sheridan. In this part of the war, Lincoln is, you know, incredibly frustrated, like we talked about earlier, trying to find the man who is willing, who has the stomach to do what needs to be done to put an end to the war. Eventually, he found that man in Ulysses
Simpson. But McClellan, despite his victories and despite being on the doorstep of the Confederate capital in the summer of 1862,
couldn't get the job done. He had lost the initiative, and Robert E. Lee had just completely overwhelmed him. Yeah. It's really amazing how that worked out.
So the Confederates win at Second Manassas against Pope.
An amazing victory at Second Manassas. Driven from the field for the second time at Manassas. Driven in
despite route. The fact that they're outnumbered.
Right.
Yet
despite
again.
That they're slightly outnumbered. Yeah.
And arguably outsupplied.
Outsupplied.
Because isn't that one of the stories of the Civil War, that the Confederacy was consistently outsupplied, outgunned, outnumbered?
Yeah, you can say that, except in a couple of battles. But you have to remember, there's a couple of things they have going for them. We need to talk in strategic military terms. Number one, they've got the interior lines. It's always easier to fight on the interior lines because you can move your
forces. What does that mean, the interior lines?
That means they're on the inside. They're on the inside. And the forces that are operating against them are on the outside of a large circle, and it's easier to move from one point from the inside to the other than it is to move around the arc of the circle. So it's a lot easier to shuffle your troops around that way, and that's what we were just talking about Robert E. Lee doing. They had the advantage of the interior lines, and people always fight harder for their homeland than they do for somebody else's homeland. You know, people always fight.
And to Union troops, the South was not their homeland.
Of course not. Yeah. They're down here unless they had been from here. And I'm sure, you know, there were some federal soldiers who were born in the state of Virginia. Absolutely. But for most of them, you know, they're from New England. They're from the Midwest. In a lot of
ways, this is foreign country. Virginia's foreign country.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Never been here before. And then on top of everything, they have superior intelligence. I mean, you know, they could go from one doorstep to the next and find somebody who is willing to guide
them.
The Confederates to guide them to the Union flank. The Union officers are going to have trouble finding somebody, you know, who is willing to guide them through this unknown forest trail or help them find the Confederate flank. But the Confederates could always find somebody who is willing to do that for them.
We're talking with Rick Britton about the U.S. Civil War. After the Second Manassas, when Lee's and Stonewall Jackson, was it just cemented now that Lee's leadership and smarts was unquestioned at that point?
Yeah, it absolutely was. And in a way, you could almost say that led to some of his defeats. You know, he had the belief at this point that his army, with his leadership, you know, not saying that he was this egotistical, but I'm certain that his men felt that with Marse Robert, you know, at the head of the army, they could do anything. It didn't matter what the enemy numbers were. They could do anything. And so now we see him doing yet another audacious thing. He decides that he's going to move the war out of the state of Virginia and marches his men into Maryland. Now, we're getting outside of our parameters, but a number of battles were fought in Maryland at South Mountain. And then, of course, at Sharpsburg, the single bloodiest day in the American Civil War, September 17th, 1862, about 25,000 casualties in one single day.
And that's what the North calls Antietam.
Antietam, yeah. Right.
My gosh. Well, if we ever talked about that, I can't remember if we've ever talked about
that. We've talked a little bit about it. Talk about that, right, but it's kind of outside of the...
Maybe after we do this list of all the battles in Virginia, we talk about the most significant outside of Virginia.
Absolutely. That'd be fantastic. That would get us to Gettysburg, too.
Yeah, well, and that's why I was asking, because...
I could see that twinkle in your eye.
Oh,
you got to get to Gettysburg.
Gettysburg is an unbelievable story.
It is an unbelievable story.
Of what happened there. And it's just, and that's one of the places that... I have actually stood there on that battlefield. I'm sure you have as well. And
yeah,
to
it's
be
amazing.
There is
it's
just
an amazing place.
An amazing place to be.
It really is.
Rick Britton, he's online at rickbritton.com. He joins us every week, and we are exploring the most significant Civil War battles fought on the Virginia soil. Rick,
you've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more.